Yes, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Jack Farmer. He's Andy Rossi, and this is the Evolution of Movies show. Andy Rossi, how has it been? It feels like it's been so long.
Too long, my friend. It's great to see you. I brought back my friend here.
Brought back the mustache. It's been since 2007, I believe, that we've seen each other. Now that we are here in 2008, but we didn't get to 2008 alone. No, we brought a friend. Ladies and gentlemen, I am very excited to bring with us actor, writer, DJ, David Newton. David,
having some lighting. Having some lighting issues. Hold on a second. Exactly the reason why I got up earlier. Jack, I bring a level of professionalism to your podcast. I appreciate that. Right. I saw you guys and how amazing you look with your lighting, and I figured I better get a jar full of glowworms, and it's just not working for me. Hold on.
It takes a special person to lower the standards of this show, David Newton, but you've found a way.
Okay, I've got it. I'm on. So bring him back on.
Thanks for joining us, David. How are you?
Well, as you can see, I have my life fully together right now.
Well, I appreciate you being on. I'm excited to chat about this movie with you. And for people who are new to the show, this is the Evolution of Movies show. And what we do is we watch a movie and then we talk about a book club style, but we call it the Evolution of Movies because we always pick a movie that came out 1 year after the last movie we watched. So we started in 1980, then we went to 1981, 1982. Now we're all the way up to 2008. David, this was a time when movie theaters had hits like Gran Torino, The Dark Knight, and of course, Zach and Miri Make a Porno. But we aren't talking about any of those. We're talking about Bronson, a movie IMDb describes as a young man who is sentenced to 7 years in prison for robbing a post office ends up spending 3 decades in solitary confinement. During this time, his own personality is supplanted by his alter ego, Charles Bronson. David, had you seen this movie before, and what were your thoughts going into it this time around?
I strangely hadn't seen it before, and I used to pride myself on being a Tom Hardy aficionado. I used to try to find anything he was in. I really, really enjoyed him. And I hadn't seen it. And I was wonderfully surprised, I got to say. Right off the bat, I have to say, it might go down as my best Tom Hardy acted movie I've seen. So, I mean, Legend is up there, but it's unreal. I hadn't seen it.
Well, something we like to do with this show, David, is we play a little game to kick things off. What's going to happen is Andy's going to guess the Rotten Tomatoes score for this movie. Okay. And then you need to guess if the actual score is higher or lower than whatever Andy guesses.
Okay. All right. So the Rotten Tomato is usually audience.
No, this is the critics-based version.
Critics-based. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Should always make that clear.
Yeah.
Those critics.
You'll know this is not a very professionally run show, David.
What are you talking about?
Andy, what do you predict or what do you guess this movie going up against movies like Zach and Miri Make a Porno?
Yeah.
What do you think critics rated Bronson?
Yeah. And The Dark Knight. I mean, The Dark Knight was so epic. So what tough competition. But Tom Hardy's co-star, I think, really upped the numbers here. So I'm going to say, man, because it's good. And critics probably like movies like this because it's kind of out there. I'm going to go high, but I'm not going to go that high. I'm going to go, say, 75.
75, David. That is a pretty solid number there. But do you think that critics rated this movie higher or lower than 75?
Well, strange. I put myself in Andy Rossi's mind while trying to guess that. And I landed a couple points higher. Mm. Not much. I think I landed around 78. Mm. So that's my guess. A little bit higher.
So a little bit higher. Andy, you guessed, what was your guess again?
75.
75. David, you're saying 78. Rotten Tomato has it sitting at 76.
Oh my gosh.
76. Wow. You guys are very close to the
number.
David
wins, though. He said higher.
No, that's actually Price is Right rules means you win. You can't go over. That's
oh yeah, because he said 78. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I should have just said higher. I should never have tried to put a number to it.
I think that's the closest I've ever gotten.
Yeah, you were very close. Usually you're way off. You're terrible at this game. but
today.
So I gotta say though, going into this movie, I saw it like on Netflix or whatever when it first came to Netflix. I didn't really remember it, so I was very interested to go back and see it again. I'm gonna be honest with you. I did not enjoy this movie that much. Wasn't that into it.
You see,
didn't really like it.
Well, that's the thing. I don't think it's an enjoyable movie. I don't think enjoyment is a word I would ever use. In fact, I don't think I could even recommend this movie to anyone. It's not one of those movies. It's a drinking game, really. I think I mentioned this. Like, you take a shot every time you see Tom Hardy's junk. Like, that's the game. Yeah, exactly. It's not an enjoyable movie. I feel the same way when Seven came out. Like, I've seen that movie probably 20 times, and I love that movie. But is it an enjoyable movie? It's tough to recommend.
Yeah.
It is one of those, you mentioned recommending. It is kind of funny. It'd be weird. Like, you know what movie you seem like you would like?
Right. You would love this.
Yeah. It's like Requiem for a Dream. You ever seen that? That's yes. Like, ooh.
But Andy, I want to know your thoughts on this movie. The thing that got me about this movie, the reason I didn't like it, is it felt like it was just kind of all over the place. I didn't feel like there was an actual, like, cohesive story told throughout.
This was one of the, and I've seen this before, this was one of those movies that I did watch and also follow along with Wikipedia. Because I'm like, I'm not sure I know what's happening. And then I started reading about the real guy. So I was like, kind of interested in this, but yeah, it was just kind of like, is this in his mind? It was kind of all over the place, but I like the way it was shot. Like, cinematography wise it was a very cool looking film, but yeah, it definitely was kind of like, I like, no way would I tell, like, you know, my parents, check this out. Right. Well, maybe my mom.
Hey, mom.
Well, sorry, it's funny that you say you followed along with Wikipedia. You obviously did it the civilized way. I ended up tumbling down a rabbit hole and falling onto a Hollywood's list of smallest wieners amongst actors. God. And he's on that list, apparently, along with two others you might be interested in.
I'm interested.
Jude Law is on that list.
Oh, poor Jude Law. What a
terrible list.
And I can't remember who the third one was. It'll come to me. But I can't remember. But that's the level of sophistication I bring to my movie reviews.
I did have to Wikipedia this afterwards, because I was interested in how accurate this whole thing was. But David, you said something that I do agree with, though. I do think the acting is phenomenal. And I agree, Andy, the cinematography, it was shot very well. I just felt like there was scene after scene of, you know, if you missed that scene, you didn't really miss anything in the movie.
Yeah.
It took
a while to get going.
Yeah. I got the feeling that the movie was like a pantomime. It was more like a, it's really just one idea, and we're going to make an hour and a half out of this one idea. That there's this, and you know, and something I picked up is that every time visually a scene was harrowing, they would have very ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding music, or they would intro something. It was always juxtaposed stuff to help you kind of get through it. They weren't trying to drive home just the graphic nature of what you were seeing. They would often clown it or pantomime it a little bit, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I think that maybe that's, I have some thought. Well, as we get through it, I'll kind of break down some things that were issues with me. But again, acted well, presented well. If this was a demo reel for someone, I'm sure Tom Hardy would be able to get a job. Oh wait, he did. His career took off after this. But let's talk about the movie. And before we get into it, I always like to say thank you to everyone who is listening on Spotify, listening on Apple, listening on iHeartRadio, listening and or watching on YouTube. You know the drill. Like, comment, share, subscribe, 5-star review. It's what I do it for. If I don't see those 5-star reviews, I can't eat. You got to give me the 5-star reviews. Let me eat.
He's hungry.
So I can then use those to trick someone to sponsor us and give us money.
Or just eat the stars.
Or just eat the stars, like Mario. Actually, I guess Andy's the Mario of this. Yeah, I was gonna say. And if you're on the audio version, you don't see what we're talking about.
Too bad.
You don't get to know. I'm not going to explain it to you. So let's talk about this movie already. We start with no sound. So I turn up the volume and Tom Hardy yells at me that his name is Charles Bronson. So I turned the sound down. Then Bronson let me know he wanted to be famous even though he can't sing or act. So he shadow boxes naked in the cage until a team of guards enter and Bronson makes a strong effort in fighting all of them. David, this is the opening scenes of the movie.
Yeah.
Tell us about the world that we are going to live in and the characters that inhabit it.
Well, that's exactly it. You get catapulted into this world and you get told the door you're entering in. And the door you're entering in is a person who has zero to offer that fame usually gets given to, but he desperately wants the fame. So instead of fame, he trades it for infamy. He can't sing, he can't act. In fact, he can't do anything that we would call being an influencer these days. and so he just decides he's going to do something. He's going to be known for dumb things, bad things. And so he starts with a sawn-off shotgun in a post office getting away with, I think I tried to count on screen. He says, this is what we got away with. It was like 52 pounds and change. And that started his 7-year prison sentence, which I think it wasn't extraordinary enough for him. 7 years is still a life not extraordinary enough, and so one thing leads to another of becoming this, as you said, alter ego Charles Bronson, who desperately wants to be known in the prison as the most dangerous prisoner, and then of course throughout Britain.
Yeah, Andy, this is, we get started and they throw us right into the lion's den, so to speak. I mean, you are in there with a caged animal, it feels like. When you're seeing this, and you'd seen this before, what were you expecting of Bronson in this character? What kind of journey did you expect to go on with this guy?
I think they definitely like let you know, like, this is the type of movie you're about to watch. So right. I guarantee anybody that has watched this since, you know, Tom Hardy's such a big name now, is probably went like, I don't know if this is going to be my type of film. So yeah, it's gritty. He's naked. There's like weird lighting and he's like an animal. Like you're actually sort of like, I'm watching it. I'm like, man, he's about to murder someone. This looks like he's like a rabid animal, like a beast, like coming out. So I actually thought the movie was just going to be him. Just, I mean, and it kind of is this consistently him being just a crazy beast man. So the super intense, you know, right from the start. I mean, you're kind of just like very much wanting to know how he got to this level, you know?
Right.
There was something very, I think, telling about the character right off the bat, how he was. Most people, I think, if you're in a situation like that, where you're in a cage and guards are coming, you're kind of putting yourself in a position to say, okay, don't beat me up, don't hurt me, whatever. Where he was like gearing up to fight. Like he was like, let's do this. Like he had been waiting all day for this to happen. Yeah. David, and to the point Andy made, this kind of is telling us, the viewer, this dude likes to fight. This is, you're seeing a guy that is not going to back down from anybody.
Yeah. And without jumping ahead, and I don't know what else, you know, by the questions you have, but you kind of see that when he becomes such a handful for them that they go, well, you must be mental. And so let's send you to a mental institution. And they dose him up so that he's kind of, you know, not able to fight. And his only desire is to go back to what he calls his hotel. He wants to go back to the place where gods will walk in and fight him. He doesn't want gods to dose him. He wants gods to fight him. And that's his thing.
Yeah, and Andy, before moving on here, I did want to ask you, as a filmmaker, the concept, what are your thoughts on the concept of having someone narrate their own movie as Bronson did in this?
Yeah, I mean, it's cool because you get to hear what he actually, like, I'd much rather read an autobiography than a biography, right? Isn't that the one where the author actually writes it themselves?
Yeah.
Then you get to get their perspective. So I like getting his exact perspective of it. So I think that's cool. And it's Tom Hardy, so he's so charismatic. And, you know, at the one point he's got like clown makeup on and like his crazy mustache. And I looked up the guy he was portraying. I mean, he looked exactly like the guy. So I thought it was cool because I think you could get a lot of embellishments. Well, I guess if you're talking about yourself, you're embellishing too. But I was just thinking of like Desperado, the Robert Rodriguez movie. Like at the beginning, Antonio Banderas' character gets talked about and it's outrageous. They're like, he's this monster, this machine. And then like Antonio Banderas comes in, he's like 5'7", you know. So I guess both are, you can embellish, but I think I would rather see, I liked seeing his him kind of telling the story.
Well, as he tells the story, Bronson tells us that his parents were good, but as a kid, he got into trouble and picked fights with everybody. But Bronson always believed he lived by a certain code. Also, he says his name is actually Michael Peterson, but now he goes by his fighting name, Charlie Bronson. And he was sentenced to 7 years in prison for robbing the post office. While most people wouldn't like prison, Bronson loved it. He thought of it as a place to sharpen his skills. He shows us what he means by mouthing off to someone in the prison and fighting a whole group of guards. He loves it so much, he's disappointed when parole comes up. He was becoming known as Britain's most violent prisoner, after all. David, this is something you had talked about earlier on, the idea of becoming infamous almost. And this right. was his approach at becoming famous. I want you to kind of talk a little bit more about that, but also this is something that kind of frustrated me. They talk about he wanted to be famous. They never actually say why he wants to be famous
right.
or what his goal is.
It's yeah. just,
and so I guess I was hoping this was the point where they would explain what is driving him to be this way.
Right. And I thought about that too, but I think it's such a great, it's such a great narration on society today, is because, you know, people want to be famous. There's just such a desire today amongst people to have some sort of a level of fame. And the fact that the movie never says to us why he wanted to be famous means that we leave it open-ended for anyone to put map their own reason for wanting to be famous into the movie. And then the movie then takes you on this journey of asking the question, but would you go to this degree for that? Like, would you, like, as you said, first up, like, refuse to do your work in the prison and have five guards beat you, you know? Is that something you're prepared for, you know? And he was so desperate for fame. And you're right, it never gives you a reason why he wanted to be famous. But I love that it really left it open-ended for anyone to go, okay, I want to be famous, but maybe not to that degree, or I'm not prepared to pay that price.
So something, Andy, that they kind of skimmed over was the fact that he did at some point have a wife and a kid and a family, and that he just decided to turn to crime. Did you want them to kind of tell us a little bit more about his upbringing, or were you kind of excited, like, let's just get into the prison fights?
Yeah, I wanted to see more. Yeah, more of the prison fights, because I think that's the movie we were watching. I don't think it was more of a, I don't think it was like a biopic where it was like talking about all that kind of stuff. I think it was more like, how did he get to this level? Almost like the level that you would just see on TV or reading a newspaper, like, oh, this guy's insane. Let's see his insane stuff. So I think they were just giving you the main reason why he was famous. And that doesn't have anything to do with the kid. You have one kid, I think, right?
Yeah.
So is it, which I am very interested to see what that kid grew up to do. Watch, he's like a real estate agent or something. Right. Who knows? I just feel like that kid probably had a pretty crazy upbringing.
So this was, and going back to David, something you said about, you know, the infamy thing is, and again, I don't mean to bash on them or try to pick this apart, but as he's explaining this, he says what he loves about prison. He loves how on edge it is. He loves how crazy it is. And he obviously loves fighting people. He never actually says he loves the idea of it making him famous or talking about it making him famous. He just seems to get in lots of fights. And I guess to me as a viewer, I'm like, are you going to connect this to the part about wanting to be famous? Like, this feels like, it feels like him wanting to be famous happened and then he got over it. And now he just likes to fight. And I don't know. He never actually mentions how becoming famous this way is affecting him in any way. Like, he's not like, oh man, people have heard of me. He's just like, eh.
Right. And I think there's something deep about that. I think as we peel the onion, I think there's something really deep about that, because again, in the pursuit for fame, you may well even reach a level of fame and find that it's so unsatisfactory. But then you have to ask the question, like, how much of my time, energy, and resources and talents did I put in to reach this? It wasn't the, you know, the Mount Everest I was hoping it was going to be. And now I just have to fight in order to validate the fact that I went down this road.
Interesting. So eventually these fights take
Could I mention one thing? Is this the part now where he went to the mental home, right?
So I was about to get to that part. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah. All right, go for it.
So eventually he gets sent to the funny farm. He still tries to pick fights, but he gets drugged. While drugged up, everyone dances, and Bronson tries to leave, but he gets waved away from the door. And for the first time, we see Bronson break. But he's not a quitter, so he devises a plan. He pretends to be drugged so he can choke someone to death, but the plan doesn't work. Murder went wrong, as he says, and while he wants his trial, he's just told he's getting more drugs and going to Broadmoor Asylum for the criminally insane. Sounds like somewhere Batman's villains are held up. But Bronson says, if you're going to be unfair, I'll show you the ultimate in unfair takedowns, where we get shown footage of a riot that made Bronson Britain's most expensive prisoner. So they say he is sane so that they can let him go and make him society's problem instead of the Queen's problem. Andy, you said you wanted to say something about this.
Yeah, just so gross when they show that guy dump in his hand. And I'm like, I'm watching it. I didn't remember what happened. So I'm like, please don't eat it. Please don't eat it. Please
That's
don't
exactly
eat it.
What all of us were thinking.
And still the payoff is still disgusting.
Yes, yeah,
like not quite.
I love that you said that, because my notes say, ask Andy about the guy pooping, painting himself with poop.
It's so gross. Do we see that guy again, or is that kind of just his only part? You see the poop hand and that. But yeah, it's a good way to show where he's going, though. He's going to, like, I mean, you hear of, like, Jackie called it the funny farm. You hear of what is it? One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Like, those people are, that's where he's going. He's going with the crazy of the crazy. So, and that dance party scene is so funny to me. Like, I was just watching that going like, oh, this is really great acting. Cause they were all like, you know, they looked insane to me. That's for sure.
Yeah. So.
That was definitely a part I was wondering, is this in his head, is what I was thinking when I was watching that part. Cause he was on drugs and everything else. David, I want to talk to you about the footage at the end where they were showing what looked like real footage of what happened with the Broadmoor Asylum for the criminally insane. Right. I love that they mixed in what I'm assuming is real footage.
Real footage, yeah. I love when they do that. You know, there's, especially when you are going to, as Andy was saying in the beginning, like when you're going to watch something semi-autobiographical and you're going to be bringing in something that you're saying based on a true story, if you get the opportunity to splice in some real footage, I think it does add a level of authenticity. And it's, again, it's, you watch the movie very slowly broaden the gap between real and like obviously ridiculously fake. So when he's on stage as this, you know, entertainer clown doing his whole thing in front of civilized society, which is what essentially that's showing, like here's civilized society laughing at this idiot who's like, you know, trying to be famous. And then, so you're taken on that crazy journey of like, this is ridiculous. It's not real. And then boom, you're brought back home. Like, oh, hold on a second. Here's some real BBC footage of what must have happened.
But yeah, very smart.
But that also, again, I'm going to drive this point into the dirt here. But again, while he's talking about it, like, he's upset about not being able to go back to prison because he wants to fight people, not that he wants to be famous. But then I see this old footage and he's up on the top of the building holding up the peace signs that he did a couple times in the movie. And I was thinking, that is him trying to be famous. Like, that's the scene that they should be like talking about and focusing on, is him almost like he did all that just so he could have that moment to sit on top and hold his hands up like, look at me. That's the fame thing. This, Andy, it feels like he's just more, he cares more about fighting. And they never actually explain why he cares about fighting. Like, I don't know. Does he want to test himself physically? Does he want to just hurt people? It doesn't seem like he wants to hurt people. It seems like he wants, because he doesn't beat up anybody. It's like he looks for fights.
I feel like he looks for authoritative figures, because they show him in the flashback when he's a kid. He beats up his teacher. Right. It's the teacher with the desk.
Right.
So I think, and then, you know, it's crazy to be like, to almost, sympathize is the wrong word, but when he chokes out the pedophile guy, you're kind of like, get him. You know,
yeah.
So at least he's like going after people. Like,
that's always the interesting thing in movies, when you know your protagonist is the villain, and so there's this sort of contract we have with the television or the movies, that whoever you show us as the protagonist is going to be our adopted hero. And so essentially, they wanted to pepper in things of like, let's make him nice for a few times, you know.
Well, and like I said, he never actually does anything. I mean, a few times, I guess, but for the most part, he doesn't, unless he has to, do anything to hurt somebody that doesn't, like, unless it's someone's going to fight back or something.
Right.
A few times he does, but for the most part, it's not like a, he's not as wild. It's like he kind of, this is a person, like Andy said, either authority or it's guards or someone who can take him. He doesn't just beat up weaklings, for instance.
Right. And I have a thought about that, with just going back to your original question about, like, he never actually, he gets his moment of fame, but then he goes back and he wants to keep fighting. And what's the kind of reason for that? And to me, what it was is, I think it's kind of smart, him understanding how the world works. Once you've reached your 5 minutes of fame, you're going to be replaced by the next story. So unless he gets back to prison and he continues to fight, his fame will end at that news story. So by continuing the fight, but he knows that the fight is going to come at a cost. I think it's less about him beating up people and more about some inner thing of believing he deserves to be beaten up. And because it's one thing going a one-on-one boxing, like when he was taking on those people in the bare knuckle boxing matches, you just thought, like, this is unfair. We've seen him take down six guards with batons before. Like, what's he doing with one guy at a time? But the fact that he knows when six guys walk in, he's like, okay, butter me up and let's do this, you know?
Literally.
Yeah.
But, you know, you talk about the outside. So after this, he gets let go. And now that he's free, Bronson goes to his parents' house and finds all of his stuff is gone. So he goes to Luton to see his uncle Jack. And then at a strange cocktail party, Jack tells his pets that Bronson will be staying with them, and sends Bronson off to go see Bronson's old prison buddy, who tells him he'll make a lot of money fighting. Bronson goes full Lionheart and beats up dudes, teams of dudes, and even dogs. He confesses his love for a girl he's been hooking up with, and she says she's got a boyfriend. So he robs a jewelry store and proposes, even though she keeps the ring, the jerk. She says no, and Bronson goes back to prison for robbery. He was out 69 days, they say. Andy, this is where, again, you could have started the movie with a 5 minute intro saying Bronson picked a lot of fights in college, or picked a lot of fights in prison and got released, and then started with him getting picked up by his parents, and you didn't really miss much.
Yeah, this felt like I've said this before, where I'm like, this is where the movie starts. I feel like it kind of does right here.
Yeah.
You're kind of like, this is where it's like, you're getting like the story and you're watching before it's him almost like telling, you know, a lot of backstory, where this is like you said, it is so much like Van Damme and Lionheart. He's fighting guys in different places. And the whole thing is like odd. Like, his Uncle Jack's place is really odd. The guy he meets that has him fighting is very odd. Uncle Jack says, and I wrote this down, he goes, "Oh, fuck me inside out. It's good to see you," or something like that. I'm like, is that a saying?
That's a British greeting. Yeah. Is it?
But you don't say that to your family when you see them?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, all the time. It's a Christmas thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck me with bells on. Yeah.
Just a very, like, odd, but I enjoyed that part. I could have actually done with more fighting. Like, they could have set that up a little bit more. Like, but I guess that wasn't the movie we were watching. But, like,
Seeing
him fight the one guy, then he fights, what, two guys at a time? And then, like you said, he fights dogs. Yeah,
I actually felt bad for the first guy. Like, he's fighting an old man. Like,
yeah,
what
is he? Yeah,
that
I
seems
agree.
Unfair. Poor guy. but he did almost have a superhero strength about him in this movie. Bronson did. Now, David, this
before
is where...
Before we move on, I just want to say, I just want to point out one thing on that. I didn't realize until now, but again, by making that girl take his engagement ring and say, I have a boyfriend, and leave him, it's another time they somehow managed to make this out-and-out villain, you know, relatable, and you sympathize for him.
Yeah, which is funny because I'm saying this, but you're right, because he stole the ring. He beat up a dude and took the ring. Like, and I'm but she kept it. That's not fair.
Like, and she said no.
It wasn't even his ring.
He worked really hard to get the. Oh wait, no, he just
stole it from somebody.
He rubbed really hard.
But that's. But this is also where, you know, becoming famous for. He didn't actually go back to prison intentionally. He just was kind of an idiot, I guess, in this case, and went back to jail.
Sorry, I just wanted to go back for 1 second. The scene where he steals the ring is pretty great, though. He's like, don't call for 10 minutes. And he's like, 15 minutes.
Yeah. And then that they circle back and say, she did, in fact, wait 15 minutes before calling the cops.
Yeah. I mean, whatever it's worth, I would wait 15 minutes.
I'd wait 20.
Just to be safe.
Or not at all.
But yeah, I actually really enjoyed it. I wanted to see this. I maybe just because I like Lionheart, but I kind of wanted to see more of him just taking on fighters around the country. And I was thinking, Andy, I know you're a big MMA fan. It's almost a shame Bronson didn't live later in life, because if MMA was something he could have taken on, he probably would have been great.
Yeah, he could have made a little side career out of it.
Yeah, in fact, he later goes on to be an MMA guy in a different movie, Warrior.
Ooh. Warrior, yeah, great. Yeah, that's a great movie.
Because that's Bronson. That Bronson is still. Once you're not, an actor is like the same person in every movie to me. I'm like, oh, wow. Yeah. Bronson, he's aging well. but this was definitely the most, I thought, different part of the movie. This little middle chunk here when he was out of prison is where it all felt very different.
Can I mention one more thing? Sorry.
I just
remembered the girl that keeps the ring. She says, well, she's like, I have a boyfriend. His name's Brian, and he has a motorbike.
Motorbike, yeah.
I just thought that was funny. Like, why did she mention that?
I was totally thinking when she said that, I was like, oh my God, he's going to kill Brian.
Oh, for sure.
And steal his motorbike.
That's what I thought for sure.
And I was thinking... I felt bad for this character. We never even saw. I was like, imagine you're just living your life, and not only do you find out that your girlfriend's been cheating on you, but the guy she's cheating on you with beats you up and takes your motorcycle. Like, what a bad day.
She gets away with the ring, and you get your motorcycle taken.
Like, what? That's not fair. Poor Brian. I'm here for Brian. So anyways, Bronson goes back to prison. Yeah. And in prison, Bronson kidnaps a librarian, and eventually a phone is put through the door. They ask what Bronson wants, and Bronson asks what they got. Bronson eventually hangs up on the prison governor and greases up to fight everybody off. The governor tells a beaten down Bronson that if he doesn't change, he'll die in that prison. This is, David, this is where... I think there is some really great character development standpoint for Bronson. First off, when he kidnaps the librarian, because he doesn't hurt the librarian. And you can tell, I mean, he yells at him, but you can tell that he's not interested. And this is kind of something I said before, but he's not interested in just attacking people and just hurting people. He wants the fight.
Right. And I think to Andy's point earlier, I found it very interesting that the librarian even just moseyed into his cell and was like showing him books with not a care in the world that he was going to get abducted or beaten up in any way, because I think it was established that he just likes to beat up gods. Like it's the authority figures he likes to have a go at. But the thing I got most about, and this is not connecting what you said earlier about him having this career as an MMA fighter, why I think he would be so great in that arena. And it reminded me of that Rocky quote where he says, it ain't about how hard you can hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep on coming. And I feel like that's what his strength was. Like, he was so not like stopped by pain. Like he was like, okay, butter me up. I'm not doing this to see if I can beat whoever comes in that door. I just know I'm going to get taken and I'm not going to go down.
Right.
And it's unreal.
I definitely had this feeling when like they first walked in after he's all greased up. I was like, my first thought, if I was one of the guards, like, man,
like, you have to do. No, I thought about the actors. I thought about the actors who were cast in the movie. By the way, you're going to have to fight Tom Hardy. Great. By the way, he's going to be stark raving lunatic, naked and butted up. Oh, okay. I'm going to need to phone my agent for this one.
And why didn't they just kick him in? I would have kicked him in the balls right away.
Right.
Like, it's just swinging around. Just boom.
Did they not have tranquilizer guns or anything? Could they not just put like the little gun through the hole and go?
No, you would think.
Yeah, Jack, that's why you didn't write the movie.
Yeah.
Then we don't have a movie.
I would just stick a little cattle prod in there and shake it around until I got it.
You'd probably get more strong from that.
I feel like he would just grab it and while he's getting shocked, pull me in through the
Yeah.
Well,
there's an idea for MMA. You put guys with belts on with like the cattle wire around its edge, and if you happen to hit them a certain places, you get shocked, you know.
I thought you were gonna say you just grease everybody up
or against the fences. Grease them up and put the fences electric.
Yeah.
That's
we're just slipping around.
I feel like that's the Thunderdome.
This is, David, though, another moment. There's two big moments where I feel like Bronson gets kind of broken. And this is the other one where he's bloodied up. He's got that gag in his mouth. And the governor says, you'll die here if you don't change your ways. This is one of the moments that actually changes Bronson. And I just, your thoughts on kind of this is the pivotal moment.
Yeah, it is. And I think this is one of those moments where you see his humanity. Where he, you know, you've been conditioned to see him as an animal. He's been treated as an animal. And even you even think to yourself, rightfully so, you've got a ball gag in your mouth and you've got, you know, you're tied up and you're put in a cage that's barely got an inch around you. And you want to act like an animal. Like, we're society. You want to act like an animal, you get treated like an animal. Mm-hmm. And then you ever had those times where like with your brother or your sibling, and you're like, you go in at them and you tell them something and then they cry. And then you go, damn, now I feel bad about what I just said. And I think that's what I felt in that moment. Like when he breaks down, I'm like, he's someone's son. He's a human.
Yeah, he definitely, he had that moment. It felt like you could feel him thinking, like, what am I doing?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is all this for?
Yeah.
Yep, go ahead.
Yeah, no, it's once again, come back to the futility of fame. Like, it's wanting the fame for the fame's sake. Like, if he had nothing to use his fame for, some people want fame so that they can have a platform to do good. Whereas his fame was for the sake of not being inconsequential in life. Like, he just didn't want to be forgotten. It reminded me of a scene. It was a great scene. In fact, I did think about this while watching the movie. There's the TV show House MD, and there's this one episode where this street guy, old guy, played by an actor we all know, I can't remember his name, but he's dying of cancer and they want to give him morphine at the end to kind of like, this is your last night. You're going to die. You're not going to make it through the night, but let's give you morphine to make this a peaceful way to go. And he said, no, I don't want it. And she's like, why? He says, I need someone to remember me. Like, he had nothing in life. He had no family, no nothing. And he said, if I suffer through the night, rightfully or wrongfully, you'll never forget me. And I just need someone to remember me.
Wow.
And I feel like Bronson had a bit of that. Like, I have nothing else going in life, but you will remember me, even if it's for the wrong reasons.
Hmm. Yeah.
Well, he kind of takes the governor's advice, because as we kind of round out the movie, Bronson starts drawing and he starts chatting with the art teacher, who finds his work interesting. The teacher tells Bronson to find a small piece of him that doesn't belong in prison. Bronson starts committing himself to creating art and even makes some for the governor, but the governor never even looks at it. After getting snubbed by the governor, Bronson attacks his art teacher, ties him up, and paints him while music plays. Once he's satisfied, he invites the guards in to have a final scrap. Brunson always wanted to be famous, and now he's Britain's most famous prisoner. They give us the stats that he's been in jail for 34 years, with 30 of those years being in solitary confinement. A quick look at Wikipedia says he's still in prison to this day. So,
damn,
those numbers are bigger now than they were. Right. Andy, this is, I guess, supposed to be the redemption arc for Bronson. He gets into to art, but he never really leaves his fighting behind. Yeah. He tried to do something different.
Yeah, you know, it is like we kind of mentioned earlier, like, how can a guy like this actually like tug at your heartstrings a bit? But he does, because he's actually like a good artist. Like, the stuff he's making is actually, it's interesting, you know, and it
right.
And, and finally, like, an art teacher sees that he's got something, and that, I don't know, with the right encouragement, maybe that's where he would have gone. Maybe right. he would have been an artist. But yeah. since he's got like people like the governor that won't even look at his stuff, and then I think it's the plot is they stop the program or something, right? Isn't that why, or something? Like, why does he attack the art teacher? Because something happens, right? Like,
no, because he drew a picture for the warden or governor, I think they mm-hmm. call him in the movie.
Yeah,
and he doesn't even look at it. And so the teacher's like, that guy's a jerk, whatever. Don't worry, we'll make you famous. And Bronson says, what do you mean, we?
Oh, right. Yeah.
And that's kind of what triggers him.
Yeah. So I feel like he was almost there. We almost had him like maybe going to pursue something. And then, you know, it just goes back to, I don't know, you can't really change your past, I suppose. So he's still kind of an animal, you know?
Right.
And we tried to make him to be like he's an artist, but I don't know, there's got to be a quote there. You can't take the something from the something, but for him, you can't take the beast out of jail. I don't know. But, you know, he's still a crazy person. But that last scene is pretty, pretty epic, I think. Like, just him getting ready for that final kind of run there.
Yeah.
Getting some painting in before the fight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I really found that last scene very interesting, what you just described, Jack, because, you know, you to have someone say to you, find that one part of you that doesn't belong in prison, is such a big thing, because, if you get your identity is that I belong in prison, whether you want to or not, your brain tells you, I deserve to be here. I deserve to be here. I deserve to be here. Who I am deserves to be here. And someone told him to find the smallest part that doesn't deserve to be here. And that's the part that he can call good. And so he chooses to believe there's a part of me that is good. And I'm going to pour that into some art. And then if you notice the scene where he goes to where he gets taken to the warden, it's very much like I'm a child going to a father figure. And I'm going to get my dad to look at my picture and maybe put it on the fridge.
Right.
And he doesn't. And that just reaffirms to Bronson again, I'm not that guy. I'm not good. I'm bad. Let's just go back to what it is I know how to do. It's just me.
Yep.
And I think that's why when he says, we will do this, he's like, there's no we. It's just me. I'm going to fight.
And that is all great. I agree with it. I think that's a very powerful thing. My frustration with the movie is that this came an hour and 10 minutes into a hour and a half movie. Right. And everything we're talking about, like, I guess, and look, it's a short movie, so I'm not saying they should have cut it down, but like, just about everything that happened outside of prison was irrelevant. You could have just started with him going to prison for robbing a jewelry store. And the story is the same, I guess. Again, I like the acting. I like the way it was presented. I feel like it was done really well. But like, what changed? Like, nothing changed. Like, there was no character development in Bronson. There was I feel like there's no full story. Like, I didn't see why he wanted to be famous. I didn't see why he wanted to be an artist. I didn't see him change through being an artist. I didn't see him ever have that moment of like, oh, I can't live on the outside. I have to be on the inside. There was nothing that really... It felt almost like a bunch of just little things put together that didn't necessarily lead anywhere for me.
It was definitely like one of those things where you go, oh, remember that part in Bronson? That one part in Bronson? Yeah, because it was like the part where he's street fighting. You know, that was fun to watch. The part where he's fighting and dancing at the insane asylum, you know?
Right.
Those are some good parts.
It's very interesting because, you know, there's no, as you said, Jack, there's no character arc in this. And the kind of the character arc does depend on whether there was an actual character arc with the real guy. Otherwise, you'd have to fabricate one. And if the guy was determined not to have some sort of redemption story, like I became a famous artist, poured that in, or I started working with underprivileged youth, or I opened a gym for kids on the street, like there was no redemption story and it wasn't trying to be. And I think this is what is so disturbing about the movie. Movies, if you take a look at stories telling around the world, different countries tell stories with an emphasis on different things. And mostly in Western storytelling, it's good versus evil, good wins. That's generally the storyline. And here, there's none of that satisfactory redemption full circle in this. And that's what makes us feel unsatisfied. But why it's so unsatisfying and unsettling, I think, is because it mirrors real life so much more. Real life isn't always about a redemption story.
Yeah, especially like Jack said, he looked it up and he's still in prison.
Right.
Yeah. I don't watch movies for real life. I watch them for... I want to see Bronson blow something up and then run as it's exploding and dive out the window right before the building blows up behind him.
And he did in Charles Bronson.
Yes. But the... But like I said, I feel like I would have rather they picked one of the things and just like focused on that a little bit. Like I would have rather seen this movie be about him trying to give up his old fighting ways to do the art. And then even if it ends the same way with it not working, seeing that the character try to change, or see him trying those 69 days, seeing him trying to live a normal life without prison and how hard it is, or or him telling me like what part of fighting he wants to I guess that it brought up all these things about who this guy could be or is, and it didn't answer. I feel like I went on a long drive, but I didn't go anywhere.
You got the Access Hollywood version of where you just see like the main thing that he's known for. It's like, here, you get to see some of this, but you don't get to see anything about why he's doing it, where he's coming from, you know.
And to play devil's advocate, Jack, for a second, which I know you love to do with everything I ever say.
Yes. Not always. I don't know.
See what I mean? Yes. But to play devil's advocate, like you just ran a list of all the things you would have wanted to see. I would have loved to see him use his scrappy, crude fighting skills to become a genuine civilized fighter, like, and to put it into a nice little civilized box. I want to see him maybe, you know, conform with societal norms of morality, or you know, and this is a story that I don't think wants to give you that on purpose to make you feel unsettled. Take a look at how many scenes make you purposely feel unsettled. They didn't need to have his willy hanging out in scenes, but it makes you feel unsettled. They didn't have to show you what the guy was going to do with the poop. Yeah. But it's an unsettling movie on purpose, I think.
This is my final run at it, and then we'll do our wrap-ups. But for a guy who wants to be so famous, he seemed very content in isolation, which doesn't make sense to me either.
Yeah, it's a great oxymoron.
Well, I wonder if he's just that smart where he's going to, like, to me, looking at that thing that says 30 out of 34 years you're in solitary confinement, that's a bad mother effer right there. Like, maybe, is he that smart that he's like, hey, if I'm doing the worst of the worst, I'm going to be even more, you know, famous.
30 years all by yourself. And
also it kind of makes you think about, well, you know, you put people in solitary confinement for two reasons. One, to separate them out from hurting or get hurt by Gen Pop. But the other is like, you know, we're society built people. So to be isolated is a form of torture, as a form of like discipline. And you're supposed to break eventually and go, okay, never send me back there again. I'll behave myself. And it absolutely didn't work with him.
Gen Pop, by the way, my favorite form of music.
his 30 year or 34 years in prison, though. That was one
thing. It's longer now because that was in 2008. So,
but I was looking at Tom Hardy. I don't think they aged him up much. He looked like he was like mid-30s in that movie. And I'm like, wait, he's been in prison 34 years. He got in there when he was one.
Very weird with time, because before he got released, they said he was in prison for 26 years. But I think what he meant was at the time of filming, 26 years total, and not just before he got released, if that makes sense.
And I mean, not to be that production person or that director person who's like, okay, so first of all, I was amazed that they shot this movie for under $250,000. Like the entire movie was shot for less than $250,000.
That's amazing. Crazy.
And that's really including good. Whatever he's worth as an actor.
They spent more on Scorpion King.
Way more.
Way more.
Like, spent more on not the even, Rock's hairpiece.
I'm not even joking. Go watch Scorpion King and tell yourself they spent like $16 million on Scorpion King, and this was only $250,000. That's wild to me.
Yeah,
right.
That's
which amazing. shows what incredible acting can do, because mm-hmm. that could have easily not been carried well by a mediocre actor. But mm-hmm. what, again, my continuity brain's telling me is 30 years in solitary confinement, and he managed to keep a completely bald head the entire time, or like just the beard, the
perfect
the shaved, you know, completely.
Yeah, I was thinking, like, who's giving him razors to shave? Right.
Exactly.
Crazy to me.
Let's give the fighter guy some razors.
But in any case, I mean, I do think for all my curmudgeoning, blaming, crabbing at this movie, it was very, I guess this is the final thoughts part, visually cool. The character, I think a lot of my unhappiness with the character was that it is such a fascinating character. I guess I just wished I got more from it. Because the character is great, the acting is fantastic, everything's done. I felt like the threads of the story could have been woven a bit better in watching it, personally. David, you are the guest, so you get last word on the movie. Andy, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I'm blown away that the budget was that low too. But and then you got Nicholas Winding Refn as the director, went on to do Drive, which I think is such a kick-ass movie.
That's great.
Yeah. But just shot really well. And yeah, I mean, because this was Tom Hardy before everyone really knew him. And you just mm-hmm. watch him, you go, that guy's a star. Like just the way he has, even the makeup when he's like the clown kind of right. character. And then him as this like crazy animal. And then him getting like that part, like you said, where he's just kind of defeated. And even the part where he's all drugged up and he's trying to escape the loony bin, right, where he's like walking real slow like towards the exit. They're like, no, go back that way. Just like all these different layers all these different layers of him as an actor, I just thought was awesome. And now that I know that, I don't think I looked it up when I first saw this, that the Charles Bronson is a real life prisoner and he's still alive. I don't know, just a crazy experience to know that this is a real life person. But I do think it was kind of like, it took a while. I'd say it was a good 25-30 minutes before I was like, I'm like, come on, I remember this being better. Like, right. So I think it took some time to get there, but once it got there, it was interesting, like his paintings.
Well, right. David, final words, any final thoughts on Bronson?
Yeah, I think it's just what we've talked about mostly. It's absolutely not the kind of movie you can easily recommend to everyone, apart from the serious R rating that it gets. But it's if you're looking for a movie with twists and turns and a plot like switch up and some cool action and then like a good beats evil, like you're not going to get all of those recipes. You're not going to get those ingredients in this recipe. But what you are going to get, if you're interested in maybe being taken on an emotional journey, I think, of like, let a person doing their craft probably about as good as anyone can act in that movie. And to say that it's one of his first ones out the gate, he hit it out the park on the first time out the gate. Like, it's an unbelievable acting because, let's be fair, on a whiteboard, if someone said, what's this movie going to be about? You could write one point. This movie's going to be about one thing. And we're going to try to make an hour and a half out of this. And so you're right. It doesn't have a lot of storyline, but it does, I think, take you, like, we could have hours of discussion about why a person would do the things they do. And I think that's the journey that this movie takes you on. And so not for an enjoyable exercise, but for a discussion exercise. It's more of a book club kind of discussion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He went on after this. His next big movie, I think, was Inception, is what it looks like.
Cool.
He was in Rock and Rolla before that, but then after that, he did like The Code, Wuthering Heights, The Take, Riz MC, Perfect. I don't know any of those, but Inception was the next big one. And then Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy. And I think Warrior was when he really became the guy. Because then after that, he did a few others before Dark Knight and Mad Max. Yeah. I mean, there's more. There's more in between there, but those are like the big ones. You know?
Well, he also did like a very Hollywood.
This Means War with Chris Pine. And
that one. That's the one I was thinking of. Yeah, and then he did Dunkirk as well. And
Those were all later. Venom. His come up. His come up was this, and then I think Inception was when they're like, okay, you're now in big budget status. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy was more Oscar stuff. And then Dark Knight or Warrior after that was like,
and for those who were prepared to watch Peaky Blinders, he was unreal in Peaky Blinders.
He's my favorite character in that.
Yeah, totally. He's awesome. Yeah.
Tom Hardy's your favorite in everything, Andy.
Correct.
Just like Chris Hemsworth's my favorite in everything.
Man, them two together. Good God.
Could you imagine? Talk about greasing up before the guards come in.
Oh my God. Talking about Thor's hammer.
On that note, before we get out of here, we always like to play a game, David, where we see if Andy can do a 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon with someone from this movie.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure he can, because I feel like there's a few people who have been in movies we've done before.
So Tom Hardy was in this movie. He was in, I'm going to do Revenant with Leo DiCaprio.
Oh.
And Leo DiCaprio was with Brad Pitt in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And Brad Pitt was in Sleepers with Kevin Bacon.
True story. Yeah.
Every time we do this, David, it goes to Sleepers.
Oh, Sleepers is the one?
He brings it to Sleepers every time. Every time.
That's great. I love it. You got to have your one that everything's in it. Like if you don't go through something like... if it's British actors, you go through like a Love Actually that has like every single actor in it.
Yep. Yeah.
Or Harry Potter, you know.
That does it for us. Our next movie, we're going to go to 2009 to chat about He's Just Not That Into You. Quite the pivot from Bronson. And then we're going to pivot again to 2010's Machete. And then we're going to go to 2011's Cabin in the Woods.
Nice.
So fun slate of movies coming up. You can make sure to follow along. Like, comment, share, subscribe, 5-star review. I'm Jack Farmer. You can find me at Real Jack Farmer across all social media. Andy Rossi, where can the world find you?
You could find me at Just Andy Rossi.
And David Newton, if anyone wants to see any of the projects you're currently working on, where can they find you?
I am David Newton.
Across all social media.
Across, yeah. I am David Newton. www. You can put that in the front and get you there too.
All right, perfect. Well, thank you so much for joining us, David. It was a blast having you on.
We'll always good seeing you guys.
And thanks to everyone who's watching and leaving a 5-star review. We'll see you guys next year.